News of the United States Government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Qatar's foreign ministry spokesman said Tuesday negotiations in Doha for Gaza ceasefire and hostage release have made progress and a counterproposal could be presented to Hamas. VOA's Jeff Custer reports.
Ansari said Israeli intelligence chief David Barnea flew into Doha for talks with the Qatari prime minister and Egyptian officials Monday, the first such talk since mediators failed to secure a truce before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which began last week. Ansari told reporters Barnea left Doha Tuesday, but technical teams are now discussing details of a potential deal.
So we are at a point now where we are expecting that a counterproposal would be presented to Hamas, but this is not the final step in the process, obviously. Until we reach a place where both sides can agree on language of an agreement, these steps back and forth will continue.
Jeff Custer, VOA News.
The incoming Palestinian prime minister lays out plans for reform but faces major obstacles. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma explains.
The incoming Palestinian prime minister says he'll appoint a technocratic government and establish an independent trust fund to oversee Gaza's reconstruction. In a mission statement acquired by the AP, Mohammed Mustafa lays out wide-ranging plans for the kind of revitalized Palestinian authority called for by the U.S. as part of its post-war vision for resolving the conflict. But the PA has no power in Gaza, from which Hamas drove its forces in 2007, and only limited authority in parts of the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ruled out any return of the PA to Gaza, and his government is staunchly opposed to Palestinian statehood. I'm Charles Ledesma.
In a new Gaza report, that famine is imminent in Gaza as fighting between Israel and Hamas continues. Aid groups also say that 1.4 million people in Haiti are on the verge of famine. This is VOA News. The former top military chief, General Mark Milley, and former head of U.S. Central Command testified before Congress Tuesday on policy failures by the Biden administration to adequately plan for or direct an evacuation in time to avoid the chaotic final days of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Final 2 weeks of the U.S. presence was marred by deadly Abbey Gates suicide bombing in Kabul that took the lives of 13 service members. Two generals testified as part of a long-term investigation by the House Foreign Affairs Committee. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin on Tuesday warned that Ukraine's survival was in danger and said the United States was committed to Kyiv, even as Washington has essentially run out of money to continue arming Ukrainian forces. VOA's Rick Pantaleo reports.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin holds a monthly meeting known as the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, which is made up of about 50 allies that have been militarily supporting Ukraine.
So when we invest in Ukraine's security, we invest in our own security, and we strengthen this contact group's shared vision of an open world of rules and rights and responsibilities.
Republican House of Representatives Speaker Mike Johnson has so far refused to call a vote on a bill that would provide $60 billion more for Ukraine, and the White House has been pushing to find ways to send assistance to Kyiv, which has been battling Russian forces for more than 2 years. Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports the U.S. Supreme Court has lifted a stay on a law allowing police broad powers to arrest migrants suspected of illegally crossing the border.
The Supreme Court will allow Texas to enforce a law allowing police to arrest migrants suspected of crossing the border illegally. While the Biden administration calls the law a clear violation of federal authority, Texas argues it has the right to take action over what Governor Greg Abbott calls a migrant invasion. A federal judge struck down the law last month, but an appeals panel stayed the ruling, which the administration appealed to the high court. The justice were divided in lifting the stay on a law critics say could lead to civil rights violations and racial profiling. Sonia Sotomayor wrote in dissent that letting Texas enforce the law invites more chaos and crisis. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Peter Navarro is now the first senior Trump administration official to serve prison time related to the January 6, 2021 attack. Former President Donald Trump said his former trade advisor was treated very unfairly. Navarro reported to prison on Tuesday. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian troops say they rescued 16 abducted persons in Kaduna.
These guys are becoming more audacious because they see the window of opportunity and are exploiting the opportunity. The real issue here is the growing poverty and despondency in the people.
DRC's internally displaced people struggle with mental health. Ugandan security forces are on high alert against a potential ADF rebel attack. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader wants to meet with President Mnangagwa. South Africa's ruling ANC sues another party ahead of the May 29th elections.
The ANC wants to see the Mkhonto we Sizwe to cease to exist. Once the Mkhonto we Sizwe ceases to exist, it would have removed a threat.
And the number of West African migrants in the U.S. has tripled in the past year. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military on Tuesday said troops have rescued 16 abductees in northwest Kaduna state. This after exchanging fire with insurgents who attacked a local community on Sunday night, one of two kidnap attacks in the area over the weekend. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
According to a military statement posted on X, troops responded to a tip about the operation Sunday night of non-state armed groups in the Tantatu community in Kajuru district. The military said the attackers had taken several hostages before they arrived, exchanged fire with them, and saved 16 of the abductees. According to local media reports, 87 people, including women and children, went missing from the Sunday attack. Barely 24 hours after gunmen captured 16 people from their homes in Dogon Norma, another community in Kajuru. The army said troops are still searching the forest for missing people. The latest string of kidnappings in Nigeria in recent weeks is stoking fears of rising insecurity. Security analyst Chidi Omeje says worsening economic problems and lack of governance in remote areas are to blame.
These guys are becoming more audacious because they see the window of opportunity and are exploiting the opportunity.
It's very obvious that, you know, the response of government and security agencies are not effective enough to contain these infractions. These are just the symptoms. The real issue here is the growing poverty and despondency in the people.
The deterioration of security in Africa's largest country comes amid a worsening economic crisis. Kaduna State has been a hotspot of recent incidents. Just over a week ago, 287 school students were abducted in the state, and days later, another 61 residents were also kidnapped. The latest incidents prompted authorities last week to order the establishment of a mobile police force base in the state. But security analyst Kabir Adamu says what is needed the most is a change of strategy.
There are gaps within the security architecture. The farther away you go from the city centers, the bigger the gaps. It shows clearly that protection, especially in the rural areas, is almost non-existent for the dwellers.
Kaduna is home to many military training institutions and installations. Umeja says authorities need to revise the deployment of police officers to where they are needed the most.
As long as we do not address the internal security operations structure that has been bastardized, knowing that there are a lot of ungoverned spaces, I'm not sure we have up to 400,000 policemen in this country, and 60% of them are devoted to VIP protection. Then about 10% or so are in admin work, in the offices. Then you are left with about 30% doing the real police work. We have to be intentional about redesigning or, you know, going back to the normal internal security operations structure.
President Bola Tinubu, who is implementing bold economic reforms, vowed last year to address insecurity if he was elected president. Last Thursday, 16 soldiers, including high-ranking officers, were killed and decapitated in southern Delta State. They were on a mission to quell conflicts between two communities in the Bomadi region. The Nigerian military has launched an investigation. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The ruling party of South Africa, the African National Congress, ANC, has sued the Independent Electoral Commission and the Nkonto Wesiswe Spear of the Nation, or MK, party. According to the Associated Press, the ANC is challenging the MK's use of the name Nkonto Wesiswe and a logo that is similar to that of the ANC's now disbanded military wing founded by Nelson Mandela. Former President Jacob Zuma has agreed to be the candidate of the MK party for the May 29th election. Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst. He tells me the ANC has become paranoid because of the popularity of former President Jacob Zuma.
What is clear in South Africa today, and based on the recent polls, is that the ANC will be losing a majority at the national level for the first time. So with the prospect of losing national votes, the ANC has become paranoid. Initially, the ANC was not concerned about the Umkhonto Sizwe party's formation. It only became worried once the former President Jacob Zuma announced that he's going to campaign for that party. And given that the former President Jacob Zuma is still a cult ruler and is loved, the ANC has observed that the MK party or Umkhonto Sizwe party is gaining momentum.
Professor, what is the likely outcome from this court filing that the ANC is looking for?
The ANC wants to see the Umkhonto Sizwe declared to be registered incorrectly. It wants the Umkhonto Sizwe to cease to exist. And once the Umkhonto Sizwe ceases to exist, it would have removed a threat. So that is the only thing that the ANC wants. It wants the Umkhonto Sizwe not to be on the ballot.
Is it a trademark for the name that they are concerned about?
Well, it is less of a trademark for the name. They are using that as an excuse. Their worry is they want Jacob Zuma to be ruled out from playing any political role in South Africa. They want to make sure that Jacob Zuma cannot campaign for any other party. Because any party that Jacob Zuma is going to join, he is going to bring the masses of support that he has been evidenced by the growing support that Umkhonto Sizwe is registering.
Is it likely that the court can deregister the MK party for this?
The courts in this country take two approaches when matters are brought before them. One is to look at the technicalities. Sometimes the courts look at the substance. If it is issues of technicality, the court will look at whether Umkhonto Sizwe was properly registered. If it was not, and they find a loophole, then the case, the ANC wins. But if the court were to look at the substance, it may as well come to it that the challenge is frivolous, that the ANC is avoiding a political contest. In that case, the ANC's position will be dismissed.
And then former President Jacob Zuma is also in the midst of it.
Yeah, he's in the midst of it, and that is the only reason why the ANC is doing this, because it knows that the former president is still a cult ruler. They know that he enjoys a lot of support on the ground. There have been stories that the Ramaphosa is popular, but that is actually nonsense. Jacob Zuma remains the most popular president after Mandela in this country.
The elections are coming up on May 29th. When do you think the court will rule?
Well, they will not take more than a week. The court could as well rule in the next coming few days on this matter.
Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. Investigators raided the house of South Africa's National Assembly Speaker on Tuesday as part of a corruption probe, prosecutors and the parliament said, prompting opposition calls for her to resign. According to the French news agency, the AFP, parliament said that the operation was linked to a probe into alleged corruption during Mapisa Ngakula's tenure as defense minister. Ugandan security forces are on high alert after the receiving intelligence that militants of the Allied Democratic Forces, the ADF, are planning attacks on urban areas, places of worship, schools, and public events. The Islamic State-linked group is said to have entered the country at the weekend, according to a statement from the Ugandan army. For more on this threat, VOA's Douglas Mpuga spoke with Colonel Dio Akiki, the deputy spokesperson of the Ministry of Defense and Veterans Affairs.
First of all, we all know that definitely the threat of ADF is still in existence, and we have been only hitting them hard in the DRC to make sure that the main body of ADF is completely destroyed, as our intelligence and other small forces look out for these splinter groups that keep coming in and out of the country. So this is the same thing under one of the commanders called Abu Akasi, with his other commanders who sat and again made an attempt to send one of the commanders we are hunting for in Uganda to come and cause the mayhem, as he had sent the likes of Njovu and Kamusi, those who we killed, and Njovu who we captured the other time. So this time around, he sends one more commander with a few other fighters whom we are tracing to come and cause mayhem. And it was incumbent upon us to inform Ugandans so that anybody who comes across these ADF terrorists or anybody who identifies people he does not understand, he informs us. So basically, it is putting our population on alert so that they don't simply sit and watch and go about their business as usual when we have an existing threat.
Yes, and especially given the ADF record in carrying out terrorist attacks in Uganda, how soon do you intend to apprehend these so-called rebels?
What we have done is to make sure that all our security agents and security forces are on alert, and of course, we are adding on the bigger part of the intelligence network of the population. We may not tell when this will happen, but what I can assure the world, or I can assure Uganda, is that with our capacity, anybody who crosses into Uganda, it is a matter of time before we get him.
UPDF started an operation in DR Congo around 2021. How far have that operation gone? Because we still see ADF managing to infiltrate once in a while and causing havoc.
The operation in DRC has been one of the most ever successful operations we have done against the ADF. Remember, they were in DRC 20 years ago. They had grown food crops. They had almost created their own territory, recruiting, coordinating, mobilizing international, and so on and so forth. But as we talk, the four sectors that we parceled out with the collaboration and coordination of the DRC forces, the FRDC, we managed to so far clear of ADF three of the sectors. And that is the sector of Rwenzori, Irumu, the sector of Mwalika Valley, and now we are in the sector of Kamanda, which is about 146 kilometers inside the DRC. And this is where most of these ADF elements that were hit and scattered had gathered, including some of their bosses. So this is where now we are, and we are giving them hard time. And that's why they are trying to make these diversionary engagements by coming into Uganda, trying to cause mayhem here and there, but we shall still deal with them. Once the main thrust is done in the Congo, it will be a matter of time before they are history.
That's Colonel Dio Akike, the deputy spokesperson of Uganda's Ministry of Defense and Veterans Affairs. He spoke from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, with my colleague, Douglas Mpuga. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barthe in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 20th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. About 800,000 people are living in refugee camps near the city of Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, say many are suffering from mental health issues. VOA's Zanem Neti Zaide reports.
At Shabindu Camp outside Goma, Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, has set up tents where dozens of displaced persons are being processed. They can also participate in listening sessions with psychologists. Rose has been receiving care for depression. She blames the war for her mental state, but says her journey to recovery has begun. Rose, an internally displaced woman, says that when individuals escape from war, they experience great distress. Today, she is learning techniques to let go of our past and to find peace within ourselves. Rose is not alone. According to MSF, living in camps around Goma is a challenging environment for the hundreds of thousands of displaced people, especially women. Every day, medical staff say about 70 female survivors of sexual assault visit 6 MSF health facilities in camps near Goma. Hakizimana, the leader of the Bulengo camp for displaced individuals, remarks that a significant portion of the displaced population in this camp, exceeding 100 individuals, grapple with mental health issues.
When we looked into the real problem, we found out that many have been disturbed by the horrors of war and others have been raped when they look for wood in the forests, which is why so many women here suffer of mental illness.
Mulekia, a psychologist working with MSF, states that the majority of individuals we assist exhibit symptoms of anxiety and post-traumatic issues.
We run 3 group sessions a day, and each group is made up of 10 people, for a total of 30 people a day. If it goes on like this, we'll need to expand the activities to try and meet as many of the needs as possible.
Psychosocial care is available to both genders, but officials say most of the people taking advantage of the services are women whose mental health challenges are impacting their ability to care for their children. Zanemne Tizaidi, VOA News, Goma.
Zimbabwe's once main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, announced this week that he was making frantic efforts for the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to arrange a meeting between him and President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Chamisa said the purpose would be for the two leaders to find common ground to help fix Zimbabwe's long-suffering economy. Chamisa resigned abruptly in January as leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, the CCC, which he founded. Tendai Ruben Bofana is a Zimbabwe social justice advocate and writer. He tells me Chamisa's desire is bizarre because he does not even belong to a political party.
That statement, to be quite honest, caught me by surprise. It was quite shocking hearing that that's what Nelson Chamisa is saying, because let's look at it from this way. This is the same Nelson Chamisa who failed dismally to convince SADC to act upon its own report by its own election observers who were here in Zimbabwe in August, who declared the elections here not to be credible, not to be free, not to be fair, and that they fell short, woefully short of regional standards and guidelines of democracy, democratic elections. He failed to push SADC and say, "Act, hey guys, why aren't you acting on your own report, on your own election observer report? Hold the government of Zimbabwe to account." And SADC practically treated that report as non-existent. So if Chamisa, who was clearly defrauded or an election stolen from him, and he couldn't act upon it as far as SADC was concerned, how then does he today expect SADC to listen to him with his new proposal to facilitate a meeting between him and President Mnangagwa? I don't see that happening. And to make it worse, Chamisa resigned from his own party, and at the moment he doesn't have a party. So it becomes quite problematic to understand on what basis is he urging SADC to facilitate a meeting between him and President Mnangagwa.
Could it be that Chamisa is putting country first because, as you can see, he is concerned about the economy? Therefore, he is saying that maybe a dialogue with Mnangagwa will bring solution to the country.
I do understand what you're saying, James, but if he is putting the country first, as he's claiming, then he has to be a bit more realistic with what the solution should be. Are we we seriously saying that the solution to the suffering of Zimbabweans rests in him personally meeting with Mnangagwa? How is Mnangagwa meeting with Chamisa going to resolve the issue? It would have made sense if this had happened in August last year or in September last year, when Chamisa was the leader of the biggest opposition party in Zimbabwe. We saw that in 2008 between Morgan Tsvangirai and the MDC with Robert Mugabe or ZANU-PF. Then they formed a government of national unity and things did improve from 2009. But right now, to be realistic, Chamisa doesn't have any authority at the moment. So knowing how arrogant Mnangagwa and ZANU-PF are, they would not want to negotiate with Chamisa in any capacity.
Tenai Ruben Bofana is a Zimbabwe social justice advocate and a writer. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. The migrant crisis in the New York City, which began nearly 2 years ago with an influx of Venezuelans and other Latin Americans, has seen a tripling in the number of migrants from West African nations in the past year alone. Aaron Rane reports from New York City.
In the New York neighborhood of Harlem, a group of West African migrants comes together at a nearby restaurant to relish traditional African dishes. This enclave, known as Little Senegal, warmly receives these newcomers, many of whom have faced arduous journeys and criminal gangs to arrive at this juncture. Mamadou came from Senegal. He asked to withhold his last name while his migration status is pending. He says he went from Morocco to Spain to El Salvador, to Nicaragua, to Mexico. He says traffickers along the way would put a gun to migrants' heads demanding money. If you don't have money, they take everything from you. It's very difficult, he says. Upon arrival in the United States, many encounter harsh living conditions and, quite often, unfulfilled expectations. Mamadou Drame is the president of the Association of Senegalese Americans.
Everybody probably think when you, before you come to America, you think this is a place to be. The expectation for these migrants is we're going to America to better our lives, and that's our truth is when they come, it's a whole different story.
These migrants are required to undergo a waiting period of 90 to 150 days before they can be authorized to pursue employment, causing significant uncertainty for many. This recent arrival from Senegal chose not to disclose his name as he seeks a work permit.
We are here to tell you about our problem. We just want to work. We want working permits so we can work, and we will all disperse.
In their pursuit of the American dream, these migrants also find themselves caught up in the political landscape, especially with former President Donald Trump's aggressive stance against migrants who have come to the U.S. illegally. Mamadou Drame is the president of the Association of Senegalese Americans.
But most of them have concern about what Trump is saying, especially talking about mass deportation. They're pretty concerned about that. So they're definitely aware of the political situation in the U.S. right now.
State Senator Cordell Clear is a Democrat representing West Harlem in New York City. She holds the view that the migrant issue transcends party lines and more help is needed from federal authorities.
We need to band together and do is make sure states like New York State, who's absorbed so much of this, get some funding from the federal government.
As the election season kicks off and the hurdles confronting these newly arrived migrants capture the media spotlight, what remains steadfast is their aspiration for improved livelihoods, particularly with the backing of the Little Senegal community. Aaron Rainin, VOA News, New York City.
And that's it for this Wednesday, March 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
every Wednesday and Friday at 9 p.m. UTC time with your pilot, Roger Moon, to listen to the RM Show, where you can respond to our question of the week, get some entertainment news, and enjoy some great music. It's all happening at VOA Africa. God bless. Peace, Africa.